Namaste. Good morning, everyone. This is the second joint talk with my mother. Or rather, she is going to do all the talking for now. And after we finish this, what she has to say, if there are any questions, you are welcome to ask her. And after that, there will be a 2-minute break where I will rearrange the setup once she leaves, and then we can discuss any questions you have on Advaita. So, as what I speak about is peace of mind through relationships, I requested my mother to share what happens at the subtle level, in the subtle body, not seen by the eyes of duality. She was gifted an experience where she could see what transpired at the level of the chakras and how the body, the subtle body, came into alignment, and relationship issues got sorted out. How that works? So it's a different perspective. It's a different path, though all paths lead to the same destination. But I thought it would be quite engaging to go through what she has to say and the end result being the same: peace and harmony in daily living and through our relationships. And so now I'd like her to start speaking.
Well, I welcome everyone. I don't know if those who were present last time are still there. They will know that we were talking about chakras, but today we'll talk mainly about the 6 main chakras and that influence our life throughout our living. And these chakras are, could you show the chart, Gautam? From bottom up, we are going Muladhar, that is the earth element. Then Swadhisthan, which is the water element. Manipur, which is the fire element. Anahat is the air element. Vishuddhi is space. And Agnya is light. And Sahasrara is, of course, open to the universal energy and knowledge. Now, what I'm going to deal with is basically these chakras from the bottom up. That is Muladhara first, and then Swadhisthan, and then Manipur. These, I feel, are the main chakras which I got to study in depth. Now, Muladhara is related to the unconscious mind. It is the earth element. In this element, we have deep-rooted issues related to safety and security, food and shelter, and survival. Here, the wounds and imprints and traumas of earlier lifetimes and childhood are embedded. They get deep-rooted, and in the form of anger, hatred, and guilt and addiction. Now, these deep-rooted emotions, they are rooted in the earth element. If we see that are the trees that grow in nature, their roots go deep into the earth. So in our system, those traumas that we have gone through our life have got themselves deep rooted and are very difficult to deal with, in the sense that the incidents over lifetimes are forgotten, but the feelings have remained, the emotion has remained, and it's in the unconscious, and from here it erupts at moments' notice at the slightest trigger. Now in Swadhisthana chakra, that is the next chakra, what we see is the water element. Now water element, 80% of our body is water. But in this chakra, the water element is related to our emotions. And those are, is the home of the unconscious mind. And we are living our life, let's say, through the Swadhisthana chakra. And here, karmas of past lives, previous experiences, impressions, they are all stored over here. Any surface, any what we see, what we hear, what we deal in life with, all those impressions are stored here. And this is a chakra of pleasure, procreation, and attachments and aversions, fluctuation of moods, anything that is to do with life, all those emotions are stored here. Now, every impression, what we see, hear, and believe. And then we come to the Manipur. Manipur is the fire element. So this fire element manifests where? In our relationships. This is the chakra of relationships. And that means inclusive of all relationships, whether it is parent, child, husband, wife, our business associates, our friends, our social circle, employer, employee, anything that you deal with in life, with your business, with your competition, all those issues that arise of competition, pride, anger, personal power, etc. These issues are related to all. So this is a chakra of relationships, and it's a big chakra. It cannot hold all the anger and emotions and deep-rooted emotions, so that get settled in Swadhisthana and Muladhara. So because the Manipur, a person is busy dealing with various issues which lead to stress and anger and frustration and any sort of emotion, each relationship invites or situation invites. Then we come to Anahat. Now Anahat deals with love, anger, fear, etc. In Muladhara, fear is also very deep rooted. You know, the fear that we go through. And then comes Vishuddhi. Vishuddhi is the center for communication, self-truth, and self-expression. Ajna is a symbol, is light, and it deals with inspiration, intuition, and inner vision. And Sahasrara, of course, is the center of universal knowledge. Now, Ajna also deals with is focus with the brain. So our brain is in two parts, right and left. The left brain is logical brain and the right brain is creative brain. Creative, now we don't use 90% of our brain, as it is said, we only use about 10%, and that is the left brain. So the right brain is lying more or less dormant. It surfaces sometimes. But the right brain is connected to the cosmic mind. It's a creative side. So our life is determined by the left brain. And that's why the Ajna works under the influence of the mind, throughout our life, and it dominates, the left brain dominates our living and daily, guides us daily how to act and react to a situation. So in Manipur Chakra, when we are dealing with all these emotions, life after life after life, it's like it's a vast book which we start writing, and in every life we start from where we left off. So that means we are living from past memories, taking the issues forward, and that goes on in every life. But since I was given the vision to see, when the process of my self-inquiry started, my Ajna Chakra activated a little. Or maybe at a certain stage of my life, I just gave up and left everything to God or to take over and handle my life for me. And what at that time I found that when one gives up, the higher self manifests out and throws light on, or through light on my Ajna Chakra. Now with this light, my Ajna Chakra opened up a little, and in my inner journey, in my inquiry, I found that when I was sitting stressed and thinking about life, what my system was going through, I found that there was a churning in my Swadhisthana Chakra, and the element water got disturbed and started swirling so fast that it disturbed my fire element in Manipur Chakra, which would, you see this water element is jumping up and down like that, and the Manipur Chakra starts boiling. Either it will twirl, either it will boil, affecting the different organs, the digestive system, the Anahat, my heart chakra will start beating, heart will start beating faster, or my Manipur will start becoming very discomfort, and the flames of anger at certain times would arise. So this is what is going on in our daily life when we are going dealing with people, dealing with if in an action reaction situation. This is what is happening. And I found that my mind, there were certain sounds I would hear, which I would then quickly put down. And I talk about grooves in the mind because I have seen the structure of the brain and the twists and turns and all that. And I found that something is working at erasing my old grooves. And a sound like light sound is going, I would feel what's happening in my brain, but I would draw that line, and then new, after cleaning that slate, new grooves were being created. So this was a very interesting thing, more interesting. I was looking at my subtle body, at my brain, a curiosity, more than fear as to what is happening. It was curiosity. And then I found that the prana, the energy flowing through my Ajna Chakra, clearing the pathway further and which looked like something like this. I was breathing out of my Ajnan Chakra and breathing in from my Ajnan Chakra. And this brought around us balance in the vibration of my right and left brain, though both started working in synchronicity. So once they started working in synchronicity, the clarity of my thinking, of my contemplation, of my inquiry within started dissolving my toxins, which were stored in the Manipur chakra in the form of dark, sticky liquid, starting to flow out through the Manipur chakra, very sticky, which lasted for quite whenever I would sit for meditation until it got clearer and clearer. Prana started flowing out. It's like a liquid, dark liquid first, and then slowly, slowly clearing out. And then I was breathing through my Manipur chakra with clear in and out flow of prana. So once these, all my relationships were being sorted out, all my issues were being sorted out in my subtle body, my brain, which had been trying to balance the right and the left brain by thinking more sensibly with the wisdom coming in, I found that my right brain flowered and seemed to be swallowing up the left brain. Till the left brain disappeared and dissolved into the right brain. And my journey became totally controlled by my right brain. That is my, well, started living consciously, you know. And with this, a new beginning started. That means my issues, my things, all frustrations were resolved, and my vibrations of the two brains also shifted, and a swastika appeared in front of, through my Ajnan Chakra, which to me meant a new beginning had started, a new life for me had started. And in that, the guru, my inner self that had reflected out, introduced me to my mentor and my teacher in my physical living guru. And once that happened, my Ajnan Chakra further developed. So now this is when the right brain has totally taken over. The Ajnan Chakra started to elongate and go through my Vishuddhi, my Anahat, my Manipur, Swadhisthan, and Muladhar, whatever it could pick up, would bring it and drop it into the open Anahat Chakra. You see, my Anahat Chakra has fully opened up. That means there's no judgment, there's no anger. Anger has turned into compassion, and power of love of power over here becomes the power of love. Everything is dealt with as is. So this is a beautiful journey which starts from Muladhara. It's like going through different stages of existence till you come with self-inquiry to reach a stage where there's a perfect balance between Ajna and the Sahasrara and the Manipur chakra, because the other issues have all cleared out and they don't play no role. So this is the journey of Ajnan Chakra to let's say, of the ego, the ascension of the ego from the Muladhara chakra to up the seven or six planes, we can call six planes of existence. See, this is happening at the subtle level. Now, this is very briefly, I have discussed everything and tried to put everything in order. So now when all this has, one is left, this is left, that now the Manipur chakra works as the full-blown sun. This is the sun in the fire element, the sun that is energizing the whole system in its full glory. And you see that my Swadhisthana chakra, that is all the emotions have been cleaned out and have moved out of the relationships. You see my feet in water, taking the water with them and walking over it, taking all the issues with it and leaving the Manipur chakra. Now, how does this happen? I mean, okay, I was seeing my thought forms or my inquiry that was going on, but what is exactly happening? So what I saw was that my Sushumna that is running through the spine, it's one part of it goes off into the, that is the Sutra Atma, what we call the silver cord, into the cosmos, and one that branches off at the base of the, where the neck and the head join, works as the branch works as the mind. It feeds the mind, the left brain, and develops over there. But when the inquiry has finished or is going on, this branch starts going. Now I visualized it because that would make me understand probably better, that the branch is going over, it's overruling the brain, the mind, and comes and enters the Anahat chakra. So this Anahat, once that happens, that is what I would say I'm living from the heart. I take things as they are. There's no judgment, there's no ill will, there's no spite, there's no hatred. One has gone through all those issues and resolved. And then the spiritual heart shines, that is the the Atman. It's in full glory. And it's a beautiful experience. I can't put it into words. So it has come in this form. So this is the culmination of the lifetimes of going through lives after lives after lives, trying to understand, who am I? You know, that question I'm sure arises for everyone. What is this life? You know, one gets tired and starts asking certain questions, and that is self-inquiry. So it's the same thing. One is thinking, one is going within. So whatever one's experience is, whether one is listening to satsang or one's guru and then contemplates on the issues one resonates with, this is what the process is going on within the human system of solving the riddle of his or her life. What all happens in the subtle body. So one has to be very, very wise and not react, because every reaction is going to set your system into a certain disturbance. So the idea is to be in the present moment and deal with the situation from the present moment, not from memory as we have been doing all our lives, from memory reacting to it, from memory responding to it, you know. So that is the main lesson, that whatever is consciousness has changed. Why are we dealing with old, new issues from old thinking patterns? Be creative. Start thinking new. So now that everything is clear, Muladhara, what does it become? So it says Muladhara is important as it is the foundation of the other chakras. If the foundation is strong, so the building. The survival chakra enables one to survive a loss and bounce back after any traumatic experience. This is when it gets balanced, when the relationships are sorted out and one is more clear-headed. And Swadhisthana chakra, when balanced, it says you are able to enjoy beauty of nature, music and arts and aesthetics of life, warm relationships without being dominated by sexuality. Manipur. If your Manipur chakra, in your Manipur chakra, you develop your personal power through discipline and self-control. This is where you get tested with the right use of your power. A balanced Manipur gives you motivation and confidence to achieve your goals. This is a chakra of possibilities. And now, till so far, Anahat and Vishuddhi were under the domination of Manipur. Whatever the Manipur would go through the emotion of anger or hatred or greed, or the heart had no choice but to feel that, you know, envy, jealousy, and the throat would voice the anger and what the relationship was demanding at that moment. So we say the heart acts as a bridge between the upper chakras and the lower chakras. But when we are working from the left brain under the influence of the mind, it is working at the under the control of the Manipur chakra. But once these issues are settled, then it gets the opportunity to reflect its true self. So then in this chakra, the love of power from Manipur transforms into the power of love at Anahat. Your identity with your personal self and the sense of being separate from others, to realize that you are part of a larger reality woven together through web of relationships, that is causeless love. And then Vishuddhi, when Vishuddhi awakens, you develop the ability to express your authentic truth by listening to others for the truth behind their words. If your Vishuddhi is underdeveloped, one will have difficulty expressing oneself, making meaningful communication a challenge. Being unclear of your own truth, you tend to give mixed messages with your vague and unclear communication, making it difficult for others to understand. Awakened Vishuddhi inspires creative ways to express your insights. So both Anahat and Vishuddhi get free of the conflicts of relationships. And Agyan Chakra, as Agyan Chakra is fully developed, process of transformation begins. One gets access to inner guidance, spiritual wisdom, and gives an expanded perspective to see beyond the senses. That is light, vision, and inspiration. At Sahasrara, all limitations from space and time are transcended from your crown chakra, From the center, you become aware of the formless. As you awaken into the oneness at Sahasra, individual karma drops away. So this is the journey one goes through when one is, I would say, blessed to have a teacher, a mentor, who can guide you and lead you to know your inner self. I know it's a lot of talking in a little time, you know, but to get into elaborate these things, it's very difficult, and it's a very subtle subject. If any questions arise, please feel free to ask. If not now, maybe when you contemplate later, you are free to write, you know.
Let's see if anyone would like to ask anything. If there are no questions, then we can sit in silence for 2 minutes. And after that, I will just take a 2 minute break to readjust the frame and be back with you all.
Masti Gautam sir and Santosh.
Yes, Kumar.
So my question is, what is basically Shaktipat, and is it something that happens by grace or the will of the master?
It is the will of God. See, will of God means there's a desire within. See, whether one is attracted to Advaita, one is attracted to Shakti Sadhana, it is a very individual thing. It's a personal, which arises within a person, him or herself. And then one follows that path.
His question is, what is Shaktipat?
Question is, what is Shaktipat, you're asking? See, Shaktipat, now I did experience Shaktipat. Now, Shaktipat is one, either a guru awakens you by the guru's touch, by the guru's look, or the guru blesses you. One Shaktipat is that. Now, the Shaktipat that I received, I wish I had that illustration here to show you, maybe another time. I felt that a sudden blast of lightning, you can say, it strikes you and the whole body shatters. You know, that is a Shaktipat which is happening, I don't know, from grace or because of grace. The individual is unprepared, doesn't know that individual is prepared for that Shaktipat. It's a very, very powerful experience. It is said that if your nervous system is not strong, one can explode. That is Shaktipat. Shakti Sadhana is different. Shaktipat is different. You experience Shaktipat?
Just sitting with you both, it's such...
Okay. So, it happens. Now we don't initiate, I don't initiate. Understand? But when I'm talking to you or talking to anyone, there's a certain vibration generated in the other person. So that itself is an initiation. You understand? So when we are meditating in a group, some people will receive that energy. That means they are ready for Shakti Sadhana. Or sitting in the presence of that individual whose energy one resonates with. You see, my guru might not be, might not resonate with his energy. I mean, I might be talking about my guru, he's this, he's this, he's this. Another person, to him, that energy is not receptive. So that is the way when you are looking for a guru, you have to resonate with that person's either talk or the energy or the way the person is speaking or looking or what is saying. Okay. Yes?
Thank you.
Thank you, Kumar.
Welcome.
Yes, Pragati.
Namaste, Santosh Ma. Namaste, Gautam, sir.
Namaste. I think something is covering the...
Yeah. Is it okay now? It's more of a sharing than a question, ma'am. I've experienced a lot of subtle activities since almost 2 decades now, but I had nobody to share the experiences with or to ask anybody what am I experiencing. And I thought it happens with everybody. The chakras were always in action as and when I was in awareness. So I always wondered why nobody talks about it, why nobody shares their experiences, such beautiful experiences with me. I thought I was a novice. I was maybe didn't know anything. I was too immature to understand. So people don't talk to me about it. But eventually I recently realized that it's not that something is happening with everybody. And finally I've started finding people who do understand and I can share with, and it's a beautiful experience, ma'am, whatever has been happening inside. And very being good. In touch with one's own self is something we can't put in words. Yeah.
Well, try to put it in words. Try to put it in writing. Otherwise, how will, you know, others benefit? Okay, they say something yes. happens. And what does it mean? What has it done for you? Which chakra is doing what for you? I have a beautiful experience that 2 chakras working simultaneously, what sort of knowledge they give. Each issue that we go through, 2 chakras start working together.
Mm-hmm.
Either Ajna and the Muladhara, Ajna and the Swadhisthana, Ajna and the Manipur. They have to work together. So that is a deep study. So whatever you're experiencing, please write about it.
I did not write, but once you said that one should put experiences down, I started noting down a lot of things that happened in the past.
So
that I did not write initially. I thought that I would be holding on to experiences that way. But when you mentioned that one should to see the progress that is happening, I have started writing those experiences.
Very good. That is the self-inquiry, self-knowledge, self-understanding, you see, which you share with other people. There's nothing, one should not feel, oh God, I don't know whether I'm feeling right or not, whether I'm experiencing right or whether it's wrong, whether should I say, whether it's your truth.
Yes, ma'am, the need for validation is gone now. It's like, I know what I'm going through is my truth. Yes, I do experience that now.
So share it, please. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Another thing, ma'am, actually, I have had grace of Sai Baba since 5-6 years. Like, it's always there. He's around all the time. Then there is the subtle activity going on. Then now I've found Advaita. Like, everything is going in sync with me. Everything is working for me. So should I still look for one path, or it's okay to walk on all the paths? I'm still not in clarity on that.
No, I don't understand.
No, she's saying that all the paths are working for her. This path, Advaita. So is it okay to just go with the flow or stick to one path?
See, if you're comfortable with all the paths, go with all the paths.
Okay.
Depends on your comfort level.
I think everything is aligning in a way, actually.
That's very good.
Because Baba is always there. Like, he's like holding my hand all the time.
So what's and the worry?
There is
only
no
he's
worry.
Leading you to all the paths.
There is no worry. That's the best part of the whole system. Even Advaita has like given me the freedom, the liberation from all the issues I've had all my life.
When you're Advaita, now the Advaita that you're listening to, when you're doing self-inquiry, see what's happening to your chakras. Related to that, what I'm saying.
Ma'am, ever since you've started speaking, my throat chakra is like doing this.
Yeah. So start studying yourself. Now start studying what is doing for you.
I will.
Okay, brother.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, Preshita.
Good morning, Gautam ji and Santosh ma. I came in Gautam ji's teachings 2 years back, and this is my second meeting actually. So I don't have anything to ask, but I'm really happy and I'm very grateful to your teachings. So I'm just feeling very happy and grateful. That's all I want to share. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's very beautiful and kind of you. Thank you very much. Okay, so we will just sit now for a couple of minutes, and then after that I will just freeze the screen till I rearrange things, and then I will come back on for a little bit of time. And so you can just sit with us, and then my mom will take leave of us after a couple of minutes.
I'd like to share something about experiences which Pragati raised just now. On the path of Advaita, they say not to get too immersed or hooked on to experiences for a very valid reason. It makes the ego feel special. And then the ego seeks experience after experience after experience. And when it does not get further experiences, it feels let down. And so therefore, this becomes a distraction on the spiritual journey. But it does not say ignore the experience. It says, understand the experience and then drop it. As my teacher Rameshji would say, consider the experience as a free sample. You see, an experience comes for a reason. To some it comes, to some it doesn't come. I'll share one interesting experience of mine. It was early morning. I was in the half dream, half waking state, lying on my back in bed. And I suddenly saw myself 2 feet above myself, my body was up in the air. So I was looking up towards the ceiling and I saw myself. And then I wondered that, am I that which I am seeing or the one who is seeing? Which of the two am I? And then the understanding came immediately, all this in the dream state and half waking state, that I am neither what I am seeing nor what is seeing. I am the witness of both, because that witness had to be there for the seer and the seen to arise. So the experience was understood in the light of clarity. What tends to happen is then next morning we are eager to see what else we experience, because now the memory is there. Wow, I had a terrific experience. What next? And it may not need a next, or it may. Who knows? So there's no investment in the experience anymore. There's an understanding of the experience. That is why we are given buddhi. In my mother's case, one experience after number tumbled out for 3 years till it just ended. It was the end. Because the inquiry was complete. Then there was no desiring after what next, what further experiences, and so on and so forth. All right. If anyone would like to share anything or ask any question, they are welcome to now. The next Sunday's talk is dedicated to Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi's teachings. I will be choosing a few sentences I had marked years ago from the book Talks with Sri Ramana Maharshi. And as usual, it will be on just very simple and relatable quotations and their impact on daily living. That would be the perspective. We have Vandana here. Vandana, I was looking for you yesterday. Sorry, not yesterday, the last satsang.
I was not able to attend because of the patients.
Yes, that's precisely why I was thinking of you. Because you are what we would refer to as at the front line of what is happening, Vandana. And I would like to know two things. One is, of course, how you are doing dealing with this crisis at a personal level, being a doctor. And two is, has the teaching offered any, you could say, peace, solace, understanding, which has perhaps made you see what is happening in a different light, since you have been following these teachings for quite a while? So if you wouldn't mind sharing this with us, I'm sure we all in India, at least, would love to hear your first-hand experience with the crisis we are facing, your thoughts, and then if the teaching has played any role at all.
That was exactly my question to you. I was going to ask you today. The Indians have a fatalistic attitude. So whether they believe or they don't believe, they already believe that everything that is happening is God's will. They go to the hospitals, but what is happening is that there is a sense of hope with which they go. And hope is a great inspiration for people. But at the present moment, in the whole society, all over India, there is a sense of despair and hopelessness. And unfortunately, this sense of hopelessness has also pervaded the medical fraternity because of shortage of medicines, shortage of oxygen, shortage of beds. It's a very sad situation, you know, so many people dying. So even this hopelessness, when it comes into the medical fraternity, it is very bad for the patients, because that sense of hope, which even a doctor cannot give, is the worst thing that can happen to anybody. So as that's exactly what my question was, that everybody does not believe in Advait. So your immediate reaction is of sadness and hopelessness. But ultimately, people like me or others who are following and have some, are rooted in some kind of path, they explain to themselves that, yes, this was God's will. It was to happen this way. But everybody doesn't understand that. There are doctors who are committing suicides. There are doctors whose hands are tied. It is a very, very bad situation in India. And it leads you to just hopelessness. I mean, if this is what God wants, it is what he wants. It is his will. But how does one explain to the public at large? That is my question to you.
Yes, Vandana, you know, it is what we are seeing today is what we could never have imagined in our wildest dreams. But we do also know that historically, much has happened the world over on large scales, whether it is natural disasters, calamities, plagues, Spanish flu. We may not have been there at that time, but as we can see that these things have happened today due to technology, due to social media, everything comes to us firsthand, and the pain, the heartrending videos that we are exposed to, which we would never have been exposed to before, makes us feel this collective level of suffering, you see. And in one way, it just shows how united we are. In our suffering, we are united. Now, not all are on the spiritual journey. Not all are rooted in the teaching, as you so rightly said. But those who are become also beacons of light for those who aren't. Everyone who has been impacted by any teaching and is anchored in it will naturally and spontaneously project that without any doership. And that should be allowed to bloom and blossom in this time of hopelessness, as you say. I can understand if there are those not exposed to the teaching, like doctors, etc., any teaching, not just this one, and who have become, by the sheer weight of this despair, are crumbling under that. It is so human. But those who have been given the gift of grace can stand tall. And all these emotions that you mentioned, hope, I agree with you completely. Even in Advaita, I don't understand why people look down upon hope, thinking that it's a projection into the future. It is a very natural emotion which arises. What happens is we invest that hope with a lot of expectation, but with the knowledge and understanding that whatever may happen is what is meant to happen, the hope does not go away. Anyone would want their loved one to survive. That is hope. One wouldn't say, oh, whatever has to happen will happen. That would be unnatural. But the hope is there. On the background is the understanding that hope is hope. What happens next is not in my control. That is the only slight difference in attitude. It is just a shift in the attitude to what we are witnessing, what you are witnessing at the front end. I mean, I'm quite sure for you, tears might be arising all the time when you are faced with patients, or it must be really, really difficult, Vandana. I mean, I often think of this, that what about those who are seeing it face to face every day and can't offer that hope because the system is crumbling?
Absolutely. You see, what happened in the past, you read in history books, what happened to the Jews, what happened in world wars, but you were not part of it. Today, you are part of that pandemic.
Yes.
So it is a different emotion, even however rooted you may be in your religion or your path. But when you're in the midst of it, what happened in the past was just history you read in books.
Yes.
But when you are witnessing it right now, it's very difficult to manage. I mean, it's not easy. It's how does one, even when the medical fraternity is sort of feeling let down, how do you give hope to patients?
Yet, Vandana, we do all that we can do and leave the rest to God. I know these might sound like empty words, but I'm reminded of my own teacher when the Kargil war was going on. And he said on television, he saw the bodies of the Indian soldiers being brought back and the coffins lined up. And at that moment, he felt a sense of hopelessness, because every evening this is what he would see on the television. And so then he decided, what can I do in this situation? Let me first address that. And he saw that there was some prime minister's fund at that time for the Kargil heroes. What he could afford, he made out a check and he sent it. And he felt, this is what he would say in the satsangs. He said, at that point, I felt whatever is in my individual capacity to do, which has been gifted by God, I did. Thereafter, I leave it in his hands. So it is not that he didn't feel anything, because we are all human beings.
Yeah.
We are all, the sage is a human being. But what is left for us is what Vandana can do in her individual capacity, knowing that the rest is not in her control.
So I hope this situation breeds compassion in everyone, for each and each one of us. That is the only lesson we can learn.
You see, Vandana, the sad point here is that we forget these lessons very fast. We as a human race, and the universe will keep giving us opportunities so that these lessons get embedded in us. But there is hope, Vandana, because this level of collective suffering can lead to a transformation. It is it has its role to play, no matter how harsh this may sound. We all have lost people to COVID. I have lost people to COVID. Now, almost every second building in Bombay, there are cases of COVID. And compassion, Vandana, it is all about compassion, as the Buddha himself said. Compassion is now forced upon us. Because why? Death is so close. Suffering is so close. It is a time to wake up.
I think we all need to talk to more often to people like you, who are far more rooted than any one of us in this path, so that, you know, it brings a sense of hope in all of us.
And I would say the opposite. We all need to talk to people like you, who are actually doing God's work and who are there at the front line, Vandana, because we have much to learn from you all.
Thank you for talking today.
Thank you. Yes, Janak.
Hi, Gautam. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
So I have a question, which is somewhat personal, but I also feel that it's relevant during this time. One of the things that I've noticed during this whole COVID thing is how the impact on mental health and also the impact on interpersonal relationships. I've seen many people going through struggles in their familial and social and relationships with their partner. I too have been going through difficulties with my partner to the extent where a few days ago I had reached a point where I felt it was no longer possible for us to continue the relationship, especially due to the fact that pretty much everyone in my life whose opinion matters to me had indicated to me that it really is not working out. Yet at the same time, I know that I am someone who is very much committed to my spiritual and personal growth. And I know that she is also very much committed to hers. So the question I ask is, when does one know whether it is a right time to end a relationship, or when does one know when is the right time to continue a relationship?
Beautifully put, Vatsal, because everyone who's been in a relationship has experienced what you are experiencing. So thank you for voicing it on everyone's behalf. My take on this is, if a relationship is meant to end, it will end. No matter how much you rationalize and think and try to save it, it will not be saved. And in my own case, the less doership I would exercise in relationships, the more they would take their natural course. What happens, Vatsal, is we try to block the natural course a relationship is taking by thinking it should be a certain way. That is also a form of violence. If naturally, for example, if two people are on a spiritual journey, albeit independent of each other, but naturally it just feels like they are drifting away in separate directions, one may try, one may certainly attempt to come back together. But if beyond a point, there's too much doership being imposed to save this so-called relationship, which was beautiful at one time, but is not now, there's a lot of effort. And it is a lot of going against what is currently the natural flow of things. Now, if these two boats are meant to come together at a future point in time, they will come together. That is what is called Rinanubandhan. If you are meant to be with someone, no power on earth can take you away from them. And if you are not meant to be, no matter how hard you try and try and try and try, it will not work out. So I know it may sound cliched, but one truly has to leave it to the higher force and let it take charge of this. I'm going to tell you something quite funny because you reminded me of a relationship in my younger days. There was this girl I liked in, I'm going back 15 years. We barely met, actually, really nice. It was fresh, it was new. And I wanted the universe to give me a sign that she was the one. So it was the Ganesh Chaturthi time. And I went to my mother's guru's meditation, group meditation, and they were doing the aarti of Ganesh. And I have a special fondness for Ganesh. So everyone was queuing up and, you know, bowing down before the murti of Ganesh. And it was my turn. And I bowed down and I said, "Ganesh, give me a sign. She's the one." And you won't believe it. My phone rang at that time and it was her. And so I thought, this is the sign the universe is giving me that she's the one. And so I was so happy. And the relationship lasted just 1 week more after that.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It wasn't a sign that this is the one. It was a sign that whatever is meant to happen karmically will happen for the duration it is meant to happen. Mm. But this expectation, this wanting, and then probably if I raised a protest that you gave me a sign, oh Lord, and now what have you done? You see, for me, none of that happened. And I rested in the knowing that that sign perhaps came because something had to be completed, which was completed in that 1 week during which the relationship lasted.
I don't find it very easy to live in relationships without expectation. I think it's very human, regardless what the relationship is, whether it's child and parent or partners, or expectations kind of arise as part of relationships.
Yes, that is true, but that is also what leads to frustration.
Mm, that is true.
I agree with you. It's very human to have expectations, Vatsal. Mm. But, and especially with a life partner, for example. But your own experience with the relationship, your own journey with the relationship will show you whether the expectations, even what you would consider the most basic of expectations, are being fulfilled or not. Ultimately, Vatsal, it all comes down to one thing. Deep down, this relationship, whether it has its own share of conflicts, all relationships do because there are two egos involved. But deep down, does Vatsal feel at peace and feels a depth to this relationship, or he doesn't? That answer, Vatsal, only you will know. So then what does one do? One thinks, all that we go through in any relationship, all the fights, the conflicts, is it worth it? At the end of the day, when I have my weighing scale and I ask myself, am I more
in harmony and at peace by and large? When I look at the relationship in totality, have I learned much? Have I lived well? Have I shared? Have I contributed? You will know the sum of it, Vatsal. Deep in the heart, you will know, and that will give the answer.
Thank you, Gautam. Thank you.
Is that your grandmother at the back?
Yes, that's my grandmother in the background. She's been watching.
Wait, my greetings to her. God bless.
How are you?
She asks, how are you?
I am good, thank you. Take care. Okay, Vatsal, thanks a lot for coming on. Does anyone else have any questions? Else we can end this discussion and just sit in silence for a couple of minutes. All right. I'll just change the screen so I can see everyone. I would like to add something to the discussion with Vandana. It is in times of sadness and grief and seeing so much death all around that one is also introduced to the peace of silence. Silence itself is death. Death of the me, and what is left is silence. And in times like this, much strength comes from silence. Just being silent, being with oneself, so to speak, in moments of turmoil, is a meditation. Life is really nothing but the living of it. I remember an acquaintance who was a doctor, young doctor in training in a small town in India. He was in his 20s at that time. And he had this supreme confidence about life at that young age. And I asked him, where does this come from? I think I might have mentioned this before. And he said that part of his training was to conduct autopsies. And he got introduced to death as a student. And he was, of course, shaken up initially. But then he started living with this concept of death. It became natural. And knowing that this is the reality in the illusion, it made him more confident. More confident about relationships. Knowing the ending of relationships is the death of those relationships. So he did not fear relationships, about things in life, about friendships, about events. His exposure to death transformed his way of seeing. We are watching it now, no matter how painful. The transient is dying. People are dying. Relationships are dying. We feel a part of us is dying. When we see someone on the roadside grief-stricken with no oxygen for their parent or crying at the helplessness of the situation, we too feel it as it is one of us. And why? Because consciousness is all there is. This we know deep down. Yet the maya of separation is so strong that we forget it in our daily living.
And as Vandana said, the big events in the past didn't happen while we were around, we are around here now, at this moment, in this moment. We are here for each other in whatever capacity it may be. Right now, we are sitting with Vandana and sharing her thoughts, her feelings, her emotions. And perhaps thanking our stars that we don't have to see what she is seeing on a daily basis. Love thy Lord with all thy heart, the first commandment, and love thy neighbor as thyself, which simply means consciousness, the source, God, to be established in consciousness is to love thy God, thy Lord. And if consciousness is all there is, and we are all instruments of consciousness functions, what option do we have but to love our neighbor? More importantly, to love deeper. We don't know how long relationships last on this plane of existence. Here today, gone tomorrow. And is there a greater love than accepting people for who they are and the way God has created them?